Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have an old friend, a former colleague, and someone who I hold in very, very high respect as a coach, Chand Das. Chand, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Chand is from IIT Kanpur. He's from IIM Bangalore. He worked for ITC for 35 years. His last role in ITC was CEO of ITC Stationery Products. He's a certified coach and he's a startup mentor and angel investor. So Chand, talk to us a little bit about your life with ITC, some key highlights.
Well, it's been a long journey, but a thoroughly enjoyable one. And I guess it's had its ups and downs. I must point out that it gave me a great opportunity to build a knowledge of business and also start and shut down businesses. I probably am notorious in the sense that I shut down at least two businesses and I started a third one, which went on to become a great success. And that's the one you briefly spoke about. It's the education and stationery products business. So we had a brand called Classmate, which we built from zero to over 1,000 crores in about 8 years. And it continues to be India's largest and fastest growing student stationery brand. I'm quite proud of that achievement. Not so proud of the failures, but a lot of learnings from there as well.
And what would some of these learnings be?
So the learnings are that I think it's important to look at, the market opportunities in terms of the size of the addressable market and also whether you have the execution capability to be able to service that market. And I think there was one very interesting thing that I learned was that if the business idea is handed down to you versus your own business idea and the courage of conviction that comes from your own business idea, that seemed to drive a lot more success.
Okay. Interesting. So, taking you back a little bit, the first Indian chairman of ITC, Mr. Ajit Haksar, and I had an opportunity to meet him also, he had talked about a world called preneurial managers in ITC.
Yes.
Which were professional entrepreneurs.
Yes.
What do you think that culture did in your life as you were building in all these businesses and in future life?
I think it really worked for me. I kind of experienced the preneurial manager because I was, I guess, lucky that I was given businesses to run. I was given an opportunity to start a new business from zero. And, whatever I learned and did in ITC is something that has stood with me. And it's kind of helping me now when I kind of reach out to entrepreneurs and help them build their businesses. So I completely agree with the preneurial culture that was set in at ITC. And I think I'm an example of that.
Fantastic. I think that culture has benefited a lot of people in the company who have moved
it
on.
It has. I think you've built businesses
beneficiary of that, yes.
While at ITC and thereafter.
Correct.
Yes, absolutely.
Correct. Absolutely. So you mentioned that, you invest in startups. You're an angel investor.
Yes.
What are some of the things you look for before you make an investment?
So it's interesting. I mean, I was fascinated by angel investing and I joined an angel network called the Kiritsu Forum. Mm-hmm. Kiritsu, incidentally, is one of the world's largest angel networks, headquartered in the U.S. in San Francisco.
Okay.
But operates about 55 chapters worldwide. The first India chapter opened in Chennai, mm-hmm. where I happened to be posted as the CEO of ITC's education and stationery business. So I joined the Kiritsu Forum in Chennai as the first Indian member.
Wow.
Right? And today, when we look at present day, there are over 200 members across four chapters.
Okay.
Now, what an angel network does is it brings you in touch with what is called screened startups, right? And it also, you are also part of a group of members who come from different fields. So there are lawyers, there are entrepreneurs, there are other professionals and so on. So the thing is, when you take investment decisions, it's a considered decision. It also leverages the know-how of the membership at large. Mm-hmm. And there's a process of due diligence and so on. So I would say that if you're a member of an angel network versus an individual angel, being a member of a network kind of reduces your risk somewhat. Okay? Although, inherently, an angel investing is a risky business. And so people like me look at it as an asset class.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. High risk. Possibly high return.
Absolutely.
But you've got to figure out what portion of your financial corpus you're willing to play this game with.
Correct. Very good.
Okay.
And when you look at, and interact with so many startups, what are some basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
Oh, there are many actually. So one is, I find that a lot of entrepreneurs are very consumed with their innovation or invention, but don't necessarily look at, what problem they are solving, whether there are others who are providing solutions, and how the entrepreneur solution is better, superior, or differentiated. Also, whether the market is large and, the addressable market is large enough. And, finally, I think the effort of business development is grossly underestimated.
Interesting. So there's a lot of debate we've had with so many people. When you look at a startup entrepreneur, do you think he or she should go solo or should they have a partner?
The ideal thing is to have a co-founder with complementary skills. So if the entrepreneur, for example, is a techie, the co-founder should have some experience in maybe business development, and that combination really works well. If you have more than one co-founder, and sometimes I've known of startups who have three or four or five, there's a problem then of building consensus, building alignment, and that consumes a lot of organizational energy. So I would say ideally two co-founders. That's the best.
And with complementary skills.
With complementary skills. So, yeah.
So, you spend so much time with ITC. And I know how much ITC spends in terms of time on strategy.
Yes.
One of the things that I find missing in a lot of startups is strategy.
Correct.
Someone gets a great idea. They start working. Yes. And then they, raise money.
Exactly.
And then they start to figure out, now what next?
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on a strong strategy?
Yeah. So this is where people like you and I come in, We, ask these questions. What is your vision? What is your value proposition?
Which is why I'm asking you.
How is it superior and differentiated from existing solutions in the market? So all of that. And then what is your business strategy? Have you defined your customer target well? I find a lot of confusion even in customer definition. And I've known of a lot of startups who start with B2C and then move to B2B, for example, because they haven't thought it through well enough. So this is where I think people like us come in and we help them think through all these issues, putting them on a firmer footing.
True. I agree. Strategy is very, very critical.
Yeah.
So, you said that you look at angel investing as an asset class.
Yes.
And over the years, I'm sure you have seen in companies that you invested in have raised more money.
Yes.
At what stage do you think a startup should start to raise money beyond angel?
I think that they must prove that their product or service works. So there has to be market validation, albeit in a limited geography. And the fundraising then comes in terms of, you know, the scale up. Because scaling up requires building a larger team, a larger infrastructure, and so on. And that is where they typically look to attract the VCs, you know. And the sweet spot, let's say, is, you know, revenues of about, you know, something like 50 lakhs a month,
okay,
in Indian rupees. That's the point at which VCs start getting interested. Yes.
So without taking names,
yeah,
would you have some examples of companies that raised money too early and did not make it?
Yes.
And companies that did not raise money and did not make it?
Because there are both examples. No, there are both examples. So my advice to startups is that try and bootstrap for as long as you can.
Okay.
Which means do friends and family. And at least, you know, build your product or service prototype and do a validation of that product or service before actually even going out to raise angel funding,
correct?
And so the problem is that sometimes when you have too much money, it's not well spent, okay? There's this abundance feeling and, you know, it gets wasted. And too little money, of course, you run out of cash. And so it's a fine balance, but it has to be measured and staged very well. This is what I would say.
And one challenge I have often seen with startups is that they tend to scale up too fast.
Yes.
You know, somehow or the other, we have this big bugbear, if I can use that term, in our own country. We must be pan-Indian.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I tell them, I said, even if you're sitting in the national capital region, you've got 24 million people to address.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts?
I completely agree with you. In fact, my advice to most startups is that start with a limited geography. I call it an epicenter. You know, this is from the earthquake and seismology paradigm.
Yeah.
That you consolidate your epicenter, build a robust business around that, and then start spreading out in concentric circles. And so don't be in a hurry to go national. I think, you know, there is an element of recklessness that comes in because, again, this is based on a view that if I go national fast, you know, a VC will get interested and all of that. But I think chasing money is not a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
It's chasing a robust business model, which is definitely a lot better.
And, you know, last question on startups, you know, come to your passion for social entrepreneurship.
Yes.
You are associated with Willgrow.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about the kind of work you are doing there.
Yeah, so I really enjoy this piece, in fact, the most, because, you know, a social entrepreneur is typically working in underserved markets at the bottom of the pyramid, trying to solve chronic problems. So, you know, let's take, say, in the agri business, the whole mandate is to try and improve farmer incomes. And in healthcare, it's to improve low-cost healthcare delivery. So through devices or through services. In education, it's to improve education outcomes in, you know, government schools and stuff like that. So there are a large number of such entrepreneurs who are tackling these issues. And they also need inputs from, again, people like us who can, so that they can build a sustainable position, because these are for profit.
Okay.
They're not NGOs. Mm-hmm. A social entrepreneur is for profit and yet delivering social impact. Mm-hmm. So it becomes harder to do both of these. Mm-hmm. But that's where we come in and we help them navigate this terrain. So Willgrow, the group that I'm associated with, is one of India's oldest and largest social enterprise incubators.
Okay.
So the role of an incubator is really, of course, to give some funding, but also to give mentoring, to put in processes, both on technology and business mentoring, that enable the social entrepreneur to succeed in a incubation environment, and then let the incubated enterprise into the world.
Correct.
So that's, you know, incubation also comes from babies, who are premature babies. Absolutely. Put into incubators.
Yeah.
They're nursed to health and then let loose.
Absolutely.
Into the big bad world.
Absolutely.
So that's what Wilgrow does and has been doing for the last 15 years. At the moment, there's a huge program that is running in the 8 low-income states from Rajasthan to West Bengal. It's called the Invent Program, which is supervised by Wilgrow. And under Wilgrow, there are 4 incubators, one of which is at IIT Kanpur,
okay,
which is my alma mater.
Yeah.
And I am associated with the IIT Kanpur incubator, where there are currently about 40 social enterprises going through the incubation process. And I'm involved in mentoring all of them.
Wow. So, you know, when you are looking at an investment in, say, a social enterprise organization and a regular organization, if I can use the word.
Right.
Would you think of that investment differently?
Yes. It's interesting. I try and support social enterprises, and I have, as a matter of fact, invested in quite a few of them. Because I feel that at this stage in my life, I would like to support enterprises that are for profit, but yet are relevant and deliver social impact. So to that extent, as an investor, I will tend to be a little more patient with my investment and my expectation of returns. And this class of investors is actually called impact investors.
Okay. Yes. Who stay with the organization.
Who stay with the organization and are there because of the impact. So they're willing to wait longer for returns.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So after your career with ITC, you got yourself certified as a coach.
Yes.
And I know that you coach a lot of people. What is the difference between a mentor and a coach?
Okay, so, you know, as a mentor, you actually share your experience with, let's say, entrepreneurs or even with professionals. And mentoring tends to be more directive, all right? It's more showing and telling, right? Whereas in coaching, it's the other way. Typically, coaching, the kind of coaching we do is for CXO level, you know, leaders. And the idea there is to get them to think for themselves. So it's more asking than telling. It's more facilitation. And it's helping them succeed by, you know, showing them how some behavioral modification can enhance their effectiveness.
Interesting. So, you know, from the perspective of an individual who is looking for a coach, what should that individual look for in determining which coach should he or she go to?
So the first thing is that when a leader is looking for a coach, I think the first thing is that the leader should be motivated to walk the coaching journey, because the coaching journey is typically a 9-month kind of program.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be a hunger and a motivation. That's number one.
Okay.
The second thing is that there should be a desire to improve leadership effectiveness. Now, you know, coaching is used in a variety of ways. You know, we sometimes consider that if somebody is deficient, he or she needs coaching. But when it comes to leadership coaching, funnily, it's for already successful people. It's adding that little bit extra to improve and enhance effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about.
So, you know, coaching is something which, Chand, has been in existence for a long time. The Western world has been using business coaches, leadership coaches, life coaches for a long time.
Yes.
In our country, it's very recent, because I think typically in the professional world, it was someone senior who mentored you.
Correct.
And in the family business, it was an elder who mentored you.
Yes.
What is changing now that there is a sudden search for professional coaches?
So I think one is a lot of the multinationals that are coming in from the US, for example, are insisting on their leaders going through a coaching engagement before they transition to a CXO level job. So that's been driving some of it. And there are a lot of Indian groups today who have, let's say, realized the kind of benefit that such a program helps in imparting their leaders.
Mm. Very interesting. So now moving on, Chand, you know, you and I are a similar age group.
Yes.
You know, and given today's excellent health facilities, most of us will probably live till 85, 90, maybe even longer.
Yes.
Which means that our so-called retired life will be almost equal to our working life.
Yes, that's true.
And therefore, it becomes very essential for people over 60 to be able to plan their second innings.
Correct.
You have planned it very well. Right?
Yeah.
What are some of your you know, learnings, and what kind of advice would you give to people who are reaching this age of superannuation?
Right.
And who haven't planned at all?
I think this is a very important point. And, you know, the planning actually begins 12 to 18 months ahead of your retirement date. So the retirement date is known, right?
Yeah.
So it sometimes surprises me that people don't think about what they wish to do in their second innings. The other important point is that while you are at the level at which you are, which is typically, you know, a CXO level manager or a business leader, you know, at that time, when you try and build your networks or get into those networks which you think will help you in your second innings, the demand for you at that time is high because you're in harness, right? So my learning is that 12 to 18 months, please think about what you'd like to do. Join the networks while you're in harness and build your capability. I mean, I did my certification in the last year of my service. Yeah. And I also joined a couple of these other networks that we've spoken about, the Angel Network and also, and so on. So that's what I would say. Yeah. And I think people don't do this. They start thinking about what to do after they retire. And I think their value rapidly depreciates after that.
Because I find, you know, a lot of friends in the Western world, you know, talk about retirement, talk about what will they do later. But in our country, for some strange reason, retirement is a bad word. And every time you speak to people, you say, oh, I'll tackle it when I get to it.
Yeah. I think that's too late.
Too late, isn't it?
Yeah, that's too late because, you know, your networks, then to build those networks thereafter is harder than while you're in service.
Absolutely.
This is what I have experienced.
No, I'm completely in agreement with you. So, moving on, you know, you've led a hectic life, you know, and you're very, very busy as a coach, and you're, you know, you're with Willgrow and you're investing. How do you manage work-life balance?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I'm enjoying a great work-life balance now. In fact, it's about 50-50. So I consciously take time out to, for example, travel, to read a lot more than I was reading while I was in service. And what I enjoy the most is giving back. You know, there's a theme that runs through whatever I do, which is really to help professionals and entrepreneurs succeed. Mm. That's what it is. So whether it's coaching or mentoring or angel investing, all of that is helping entrepreneurs and professionals to succeed.
Wonderful. Wonderful. There's one question that I love to ask all my guests, and that is that, you know, over the years, we've had lots of failures. What are your biggest learnings from your biggest failures?
I think the most important thing is resilience, to be able to quickly get up, pull yourself up. And what actually wins the day is the courage of conviction in what you do. So whether it's in, you know, running a new venture, whether it's in planning your second innings, in you know, driving things that you do, it's your courage of conviction and it's the drive that you have which actually takes you a very long way. So that's something I believe again, we should continue to sustain. Mm.
Fantastic. My next question to you is, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
Well, a lot of what I'm doing now is for the first time. I mean, every new startup that I get engaged with, every new coaching engagement is new. And I really enjoy it. I think it keeps the gray cells working, and it's very satisfying, you know. And in most cases, I would say that coaching, mentoring is a private victory. And that's what I enjoy very much.
Correct. Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, you yes. were my guide when I was getting certified as a coach. Yeah. And, you know, these are things that you told me even then.
Yes.
So, Chand, my last question to you. You know, comes back to startups and your giving back. What would your advice be to people who want to become entrepreneurs? And, you know, these two buzzwords of a unicorn and an indicorn seem to be have taken the entire nation by storm.
I know.
What are your thoughts on, for startups? Should we be driven by valuation or by the business?
I'm a little old-fashioned in this respect. Correct. And I think we should be driven by the business. I'm all for building a robust business model, starting small and systematically growing it, making sure that all the lead indicators are supportive of a sustainable business. And I think, you know, investors, valuation and others will come. Mm. And I feel that there is too much distraction for the entrepreneur in chasing some of these things. Mm. So very often when I go and meet my investees or entrepreneurs and they start talking about fundraising, I said, look, I'm not here to discuss fundraising. I'm here to help you with your business model. Mm. You know, what are your processes? How many customers have you acquired? What are your repeat customers? Where is your customer satisfaction feedback? You know, what are your internal processes? So my focus is on helping them build a robust business. And I think that goes a very, very long way.
Amazing. John, thank you very much. I think you've been very straightforward and you've been very transparent. And the thousands of people who listen to our podcasts will learn a lot from your words of wisdom. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's been a pleasure being here. And thank you for having me on this program.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.